Well, first of all, I hope the microphone is working all right and you can hear me. Well, thank you very much for that kind introduction. I'd also like to thank the Institute for inviting me. It shows that some people appreciate my somewhat unorthodox work, which isn't so in all quarters. So here I'm going to be telling you a bit about how we're getting it with our somewhat unorthodox ideas. So I called my talk The Biological Aspects of Fundamental Reality. And the main thesis I'm going to talk about is the idea that life is a fundamental theory of reality and not just a thing that just happens to occur under certain conditions and rather rarely. Just mention my main collaborator in this, Alexa Yardley, who has some interesting ideas or contacted me with some interesting ideas on the organization of complexity, which are featured in our thinking. Okay, now let me elaborate a basic idea of what we think is happening. The orthodox view is that of A on the slide, and as you see, the ordinary life is supposed to depend on what I call everyday physics. Now, everyday physics, by that I simply mean the physics excluding the things which happen at high energy, all the unorthodox kind of particles. These are normally assumed to be irrelevant to life. Life is supposed to depend on ordinary physics and chemistry based on electrons and nuclei and so on, and not on any of the things which have appeared in fundamental physics. Fundamental physics is something that's a little unclear, but one version of it is the so-called standard model, which has ordinary physics with the dominated by the electromagnetic interaction as a special case. So the usual picture is that there's some fundamental level of physics which might be a standard model, or you might go beyond this to speculations like string theory. And this is ordinary physics is just some particular manifestation of this more fundamental physics, and ordinary life depends on that. Now, the alternative, which I want to develop here, is that actually fundamental physics includes biology. Life is an essential part at this fundamental level, which I should say is very speculative. Some people, well, a lot of people go by string theory, but it's not. There's really no evidence one way or the other. So it's rather a mystery as to what fundamental physics is. And so, as far as what we know, it might include life. And in that case, ordinary life will be, to some extent, dependent on this supposed deeper form of life. And everyday physics may be connected with this as well. Okay, so so if we're assuming that there's life of some form is present at a more fundamental level and not just at the level we're familiar with, you might ask, well, why is it we don't see it? Or to be more precise, what are the manifestations? How would we expect it to manifest? Well, I've commented here that biology often doesn't show up in physics experiments anyway. You rarely, in a physics experiment, have to decontaminate your apparatus. You'll get the same results for, say, the band structure of a semiconductor, even if you don't get rid of bacteria. So, in other words, this fundamental life might not necessarily show up visibly in physics experiments, so it is not excluded by physics experiments. On the other hand, of course, bacteria do manifest in reality. You'd better not keep food too long because it will be affected by bacteria. And so, while this thing we're postulating is not going to show up in ordinary the kind of experiments high energy physics do, it may show up in other places. And and it may be very important in problems like this. The fact of the universe being friendly to life. This is a thing which has been a subject of much speculation under what's known as the anthropic principle, that concept, because you find that the universe seems to be fine-tuned to support life. You can interpret this in all sorts of ways, but it might be because the explanation might be because of this fundamental life. Another mystery is the origin of life. People don't really have any good models for the origin of life, so it may be that life doesn't actually originate, didn't originate on the Earth. It was produced by life at some deeper level. These are all possibilities that will have to be investigated more fully in the future. A thing which is also maybe a manifestation of fundamental life is what we might call the higher aspects of mind. For example, the ability to do mathematics and the fact that we are musical. Now, first is something which Roger Penrose has brought before. He's tried to argue that the brain theories cannot explain our mathematical abilities. Well, I don't actually think his arguments are correct, but nevertheless, I think it is the case that it is a difficult problem understanding where mathematical abilities come from. The fact that a mathematician can sort of intuit mathematical results, and everybody agrees on this, and we don't seem to need much training. It just requires a sort of basic ability to do mathematics. But since I don't think Penrose's argument quite works for mathematics, there's another thing I'm interested in, which is our musical abilities. And if you look on my web page and follow the publication links, you'll find some arguments based on music. And I collaborated with a musicologist there, and we think that the superficial ideas as to how the brain processes music, well, those may be okay for the basic facts about music, but the fact that the aesthetic quality of music seems to depend on very specific sequences of notes, very specific themes, we argue that you can't really explain this by the simple models on the structure of music. So in other words, there's something about music, say its meaningfulness, which may require a deeper explanation. So this again might be a manifestation of life at a fundamental level in the way I'm going to be discussing. Also, there's the taboo objects. There's probably somebody waiting to throw me out for mentioning intelligent design. Well, this is something which most scientists seem to have got completely wrong. I don't want to get diverted into a discussion of this at some point, but the concept of intelligent design, which most critics of it seem to have, is very different from the how the people pushing intelligent design see it. And it's just a question whether it's something which has facilitated the way evolution went. Again, this is the kind of thing which might come out of this biological model. But really what I want to do is go through a lot of the arguments and see why one might be led in this direction. So what I have in this slide is really just a synopsis of the things I'm going to be covering in the lecture. First of all, I say a little bit more about the levels of reality which featured in my earlier slides, the sort of everyday physics and fundamental physics. Then the deeper issue is the question of what is life. This is a very tricky subject on which there's not much agreement, and we have some theories about what is most important for life in a general sense. And then a thing which is in some papers I published previously, which nobody has refuted it as yet, is actually Niels Bohr introduced the idea that life and quantum mechanics might not fit together as nicely as biologists might think. Then we get on to some subtleties, that there may be awkward kind of models and chaos networks, and how these are just bits of the picture I'll be developing. And, you can look at those, but I won't go through detail. And then we finally get to talking about what fundamental life might be. Okay, so the question of levels of physical reality. Well, there's more visible levels which people know about, even if they aren't scientists. And then science tries to produce models and explanations for what we see at the ordinary physical level. So we could say that this is, well, one could talk about classical ideas of atoms, which are a kind of intermediate level, which chemists knew about before it was all explained by quantum theory. So quantum theory is the next level of explanation, if you like. Then people found there were all these funny particles, and so the theories got more complicated till one had the standard model, which integrates three of the four forces together and accounts for very many of the particles which were discovered. Then general relativity of Einstein's theory, which provided an explanation for gravity. But it was found rather embarrassingly that people thought we can just, since we've unified the three forces, it shouldn't be very difficult to unify gravity. But they found there were serious difficulties connecting the two. And now there are only speculations. There are many competing theories as to how these might be put together. The one which gets most of the attention, most of the funding, is the string theory. But there are quite a range of alternative theories. So it's really rather mysterious. I guess, in fact, there's the M theory, where M, according to some versions, count for mystery. The interesting thing is, the farther you go into trying to explain these things, the more inaccessible the theories become. In fact, I was looking at a Wikipedia article on M theory, and they said, the form of the theory is known, but not the actual theory. I don't quite understand how you would know the form of the theory without having the theory, but that's the kind of thing which has come up. Okay, well now I want to switch from usual physics to talking about life. And it's rather difficult to define what you mean by life. Well, you can list a set of properties. The thing, if you ask what's more fundamental, what's most fundamental, I think one of the most interesting things about life is that life is, as it were, going somewhere, which is a thing that happens in a range of contexts. For example, as the embryo develops, that's going towards the organism that it's going to develop into. The organism is going to develop into the fully developed organism. It's going towards a definite kind of result. Again, when you consider planning, the current situation is heading towards a goal state. So that seems to be a very fundamental aspect of life. People don't like it very much because it's really final causation, which was supposed to be abolished from physics. Now, if you don't add in complexity, then future-directedness is not a difficult thing because you can easily invent mechanisms which get to some specified outcome. But when you allow for complexity of life, it then starts to become mysterious as to why you should get specific end results. And this is not very clear. There was some ideas of Robert Rosen, who played with category theory as a way of specifying this, but it's still not very clear what we should have there. The next thing is just putting this in the form of a picture. Saying, well, it's something of some general complex mess is heading towards something which is well-defined, which I'm symbolizing by that. But some crucial aspects of this are important. The fact is you have a cycle, so you might have the organism which produces the basic cell which develops into the organism again. And you see, once you've got a cycle like this, the problem is sort of solved, because if you end up in the starting point, then you're going to go through the same, and you're going to go through the same. And so the cyclic property of life is, if you're going to account for that, then that's one of the important things. This is also important because it's connected with selection mechanisms, that if you have some system which doesn't manage to get it here, then it will not appear. So what we see in the biological sphere is those things which actually manage to get into a cycle. As selection is important. On the other hand, you might, this bottom thing symbolizes that you might end up to something slightly different, and that's important because you then get variability and you can then get evolution. So these are some of the aspects of life which should be part of any theory. Okay, well now, before I go further, I want to get into some fundamental difficulties. The question of whether life can be actually understood in terms of physics. Well, superficially, all is well. You seem to be able to reproduce biology to physical and chemical processes, because what happens is you investigate an organism, and then you see, such and such a chemical reaction is occurring, and this explains such and such a process. This has produced the idea that life is simply physics and chemistry. But when you look at it in more detail, you find that this is not actually so. There's a thing called chaos, which intrudes here. Chaos is the sometimes referred to the butterfly effect. It's the fact that a small change now may produce a very big change later, that very similar weather patterns, when you calculate how they will progress, may produce completely different situations in the future. The trouble is, biology, biosystems are complex systems where the same thing can happen. So what you might think is a model that explains how your organism behaves will not actually, because a small change in it will lead to a completely different situation. And I'm not sure if this made it to the slide. No, I seem to have forgotten to put it in. But a simple example is that the brain, if you change the brain slightly, then the behavior will change. Because in fact, when you learn something, there are little changes in the synaptic connections and you will behave differently. So this idea that you can define a physical state and predict the behavior, which works nicely in physics, does not work in biology. So what a physicist does if he wants to explain the properties of a crystal, say, is to produce a model of a crystal, and then you can calculate the behavior of the crystal. So what I'm saying is that doesn't actually work in biology. You can't write down a model for an organism which will explain its behavior, because any small change in the your initial assumption would produce a big change afterwards. And one symptom of this is that a set of parts may not produce something which works as a functioning whole. So this is a difficulty in biology, that we can't explain wholes by enumerating the parts because of a sensitivity. On the other hand, it is understood roughly what's going on, because think of some kind of organ which behaves in a certain way. If it didn't behave correctly, then some correction process would kick in and correct the fault. So organisms are behaving in a strange way, but the parts are producing the behavior of the whole, but then the behavior of the whole is getting back and changing the parts. And that kind of loop is a part of biology, but it's not very obvious how this would happen. I mean, it's okay as a principle, and you can see what all the regulatory mechanisms are. So all we can say rather qualitatively is that an organism has enough regulatory principles that it can actually keep going and behave the way that it should. So this is something which occurs in biology which doesn't occur in physics. And a statement made by Weinberg in this connection is actually incorrect. Weinberger stated that the arrows of explanation are always bottom up, from the microscopic level to the macroscopic level. And I would have liked to point out to him that this isn't so in biology, but this was a ceremonial lecture where there wasn't any discussion. So in biological systems, you sometimes explain the parts by talking about the system they form a part of. And it's really a complete system which puts the parts together in the right way, and you have to think in system terms in biology in a way that you don't in physics. And in fact, it's very likely that the kind of models you use are very complicated ones. This is where my collaborators came in with some intuitive views as to what it's really like. For one thing, a fixed model won't work, but you will do better if you have a dynamic model. So if a model is allowed to change with time, then you may be able to get a closer approximation to how things are occurring. But it's more complicated than that. You haven't even got one model at one time. You've got a set of models working in parallel. It's like parallel universes. All of this, I hope, will become clearer when I go through more of my slides. And what you actually have are provisionally stable structures, which then change for some reason into a different stable structure, which is stable for time. But the structures that you have are constantly reforming, reshaping, and dissolving. And that's the truth of the matter in biology, which most scientists have not got around to realizing, and yet it's almost certainly this is the case. You'll find some of this in Robert Rosen's writings, like his book Life Itself. He didn't quite spell it out in this way. There's an analogy which may be helpful. But the two views I've been talking about, the kind of nicely behaved picture which physicists use, where you have a nice single model which you can calculate with, and a more dynamic kind of picture that I mentioned in my last slide, are in some ways like solids and liquids, which I can illustrate with this picture. There's a kind of model which physicists use talking about solids. It's called the phonon model, but it's really just saying that you have, you represent a crystal at any given time by saying you've got a background structure, a perfect structure, and you've got deviations from that structure, and you put these deviations into your model, and you crank things around, and you get lattice vibrations and so on. But this idea that you describe your system in terms of displacements from a perfect lattice does not work with a liquid, because in liquid the atoms move around indefinitely and your displacements would get completely out of control. So, well, it's obvious that solids and liquids are different, but this is sort of indicating the kind of difference I'm talking about. In a solid, things are nicely behaved. You've got a background structure which you can think in terms of. In liquid, there isn't that kind of regular background structure. Similarly, I'm saying in biology, you don't have a nice stable structure. You have a constantly reshaping structure, which is much more difficult to handle, and we don't know very much about it. A few months ago, somebody wrote to me, whom I actually met at the Lindau meeting, and he said, "What do you think of this paper? Here's the number if you want to follow it. It's on the Physics Preprint Archive. That's the reference number up here." And his picture was interestingly similar to ours. He developed it from a different viewpoint, but I think it's all very nicely expressed. He asked the question of how will chaos affect our description of nature. And he said, well, we can think in terms of systems, and these get selectively connected. This is sort of symbolized by these connected dots The connection is a kind of resonant connection, a selective connection. Systems interact in a selective way, and so you get this kind of web, a complex which has its own mode of behavior. Okay, which you call an information web. And this is, his generic account of complicated systems. And the idea of this is connecting with our picture, that you have a rather disorganized background, but because of this resonant connection, well-formed systems will emerge. But the connections may change with respect to time. Two systems which were linked may stop being so well linked. I should say you can find all sorts of examples of this. People, say, get together in a group and talk, and they produce something new from this connected web, and then they go away, or they may perhaps cease to be interested in each other, they form new groupings. So this is quite a nice idea. Chaos is relevant here because if we think of two systems being connected resonantly, and you make a small shift in one of them, then they lose their resonant connection. Similarly, in a chaotic system, two systems that are connected are liable to change their connections, and that'll be a factor that perturbs the configuration. Okay, well now some things which I'm going to elaborate in the following slides, that there may be a number of these connections going on at some time. For example, in a room, people may be talking together, one group and then another group and so on. Our collaborator is very fond of the idea that one is two, but let me, I think we'll come to this in the next slide. One of the points about this is that these descriptions I'm talking about, I talked about descriptions sliding from one to another, but none of these descriptions is actually going to be perfect. They're all approximations. And you may have many descriptions present at the same time. For example, you may, this picture of two systems resonantly connected, you can, if you like, it may be good to think of it as two systems coupled together, or you may equally well want to think of it as a single system, because that single system will have some well-structured behavior. Not only that, the interaction between the two systems may have its own structure. For example, if two people are talking, the conversation has its own structure. So this will give you a feel of how complicated things really are, that you have to have all kinds of models, and models start applying and then stop applying and so on. So it's really all one big mess. But the whole point is that we pick out a particular piece of that mess to explain what we're interested in, but we don't get a picture of a whole, and we can't really pin down what's happening to anything in the way that a scientist likes to do. And one special case of these two interconnected systems is one where one system informs another. For example, when two people are speaking, the information one person has then gets imprinted into another system. But this is happening all the time in networks. Again, this is an intermediate stage, but these things I talked about may be the really fundamental things in life. I hope I'm convincing you that really biological systems are a lot more messy than you might think. But roughly speaking, we should think of life in terms of systems, and then systems are looking for partner systems. Again, biologists find this sort of thing. For example, in the brain, one neuron sends out a fiber which looks for something it can join onto. I think this is the kind of thing that biologists find. And a general mechanism in life is systems sort of not joining together in a predefined way, but having a kind of conversation and deciding what kind of interaction they should have. And generally, very often, they may decide they don't want to form a group and move on. But anyway, this coupling occurs, and you will get eventually more complicated hierarchies and groups of systems. So life is all about complicated cooperating systems. Now, this is a very general view of life, and the life we're familiar with can perhaps be characterized as something highly evolved. And this is because... I'll explain in a moment the connection between stability and evolution. But another feature of this whole picture, which I want to elaborate now, is I talked about the problem of explaining the origin of life. It's because life, that we know it, is extremely complicated, and it's hard to... even a single cell is extremely complicated, and mysteriously it manages to keep going, reconstruct itself. But this theory allows for the possibility that life may have started off, life in some form may exist in something much simpler, a picture of which is described by Weber. Weber is a nice illustration because we do get well-defined structures from things like tornadoes to larger scale things like the this cycle that affects the weather. Name's just eluded me at the moment. Anyway, there are all these persisting structures in the weather, and so our idea is that at this more fundamental level, the corresponding life has a very simple protoform that then the simple mutually supportive structures may combine to form complexes which are stable, and this goes on. Now, if you've got enough stability, the connection between this and evolution is that life may make a significant advance, and if there's enough stability, that advance will not get lost because of some fluctuation. Well, the way this is achieved in ordinary life is DNA, which is has a very stable structure and a mechanism for replication. And because of the stability of DNA, that new developments can occur from old. Oh, I know, El Nino. I don't know why I couldn't remember that, but I get these blocks. That's the persistent phenomenon in the weather. Okay. Well, here's a thing which my collaborator is very keen on, circles, and through dialogue we eventually worked out that the reference in ordinary scientific terminology is something like this. We have a group of systems, and at any given time, let's suppose that these four objects here behave as a coherent group. But now we argue that this group may encounter something else with which it can do something even more fancy, and so this gap will get filled. You'll have a larger group, and so you can get more and more complex groups with more subtleties. Now, there's a project which... this is exemplified by riding a bicycle. Riding a bicycle involves quite a number of components working together. But when you start to learn a bicycle, one component is missing. There's that question mark. And then suddenly the system comes and it gets added to the complex, and this particular complex is then riding a bicycle. I have a student had a project which is the only computer simulation we have of this at the moment. This is on the Cogprints archive, and there's the URL for it. This project was supposed to eventually to simulate walking. He got a certain distance, and then the powers that be said, this is not physics, this project should be stopped. So it looked like the project was really taking off with students doing computations, actually. So this was no longer things in the mind, but something done by computer programs. But unfortunately, that was actually in 1994 or 5 that was done. We haven't, because the physics department is so hostile to this, it hasn't gone any farther in the computer simulation business. But this, I think, is encouraging, since it shows you can make this kind of model. This model was basically started off with a simple skill of learning to balance, and the computer program looked for things which could add in to get better and better balance, and it did eventually find a produce a stable system. Now, this whole scheme can be you don't have to extend it. All sorts of things can be incorporated within it. So let's look at observation. Well, we've had these previous slide I won't get back to. Well, maybe it's in the next slide. Stick to there. Observation is essentially one system interacting with another, picking up information from it, producing a description which can be used to do various things. And if you have two systems observing each other, as in a conversation or any two, organisms interacting, they observe each other and respond and shape each other, leading to a stable combination in favorable circumstances, like people may decide to become friends because they've shaped each other in a good way, in a way which works well. Now, I'll come to these later as examples, pairing and replication and triads, but I want to bring up another feature about observation first of all. I talked about the possibility that networks could overlap, and what observation does or can do is that another observer system will choose which system to interact with, and it will then develop that system. So this will sort of lead to one system becoming important because it is connected with another system. So although there's this vast number of systems going around in the background, this idea that observation involves some system joining in will mean that not all of these will be equally important in the subsequent development. A lot of these developments will not get anywhere, but some will, and so systems will develop like that. Now, pairing and replication. Well, I'm here talking about the fact that two systems, A and A prime, may pair in this way, which may be depend on the context. And now, what you can get is in a different system, well, the fact that two can form a stable combination means, supposing we start off with A, and A prime, which is predisposed to join with it, comes along, you'll get A and A prime being joined. But now, if A prime is by itself, A can come along and join with it. Now, if you think about it, this is just the way DNA replicates, that one base pair joins with another, and then that first goes off, and then the original joins with it. So this is actually DNA replication is an example of this. But there are all sorts of examples. There are pairs like a specification of a process and a realization. If you have a specification of a process, then you can go ahead and realize it. Or equally well, if you do something, you can specify it. So this pairing, again, explains all sorts of things. So it kind of looks as if we've really got to fundamentals of biology, and everything is just an elaboration of these particular basic ideas. Well, now here's the thing. Well, I haven't quite sorted out this work, but my collaborator uses intuition more than logic, so we haven't connected these two together, but it's... she proposes that this is connected with geometry and these are physical circles. And you can imagine that systems might join together to form a circle. That would be a stable combination. And that's... A circle is really the most elementary kind of object or space, and these circles might then join up to form a universe. But what one would hope... A direction in which one would hope this could be developed is that they would show how your originally biological thing may structure a universe, and that this will be the explanation of the origin of the origin of a universe. And this has parallels with an idea of Wheeler, which I'll come to in a moment. But in any case, we leave that for the moment. A sort of summary of what I've said so far is that biology is a very different game to physics. Physicists have developed a game which is really just an elaboration of Newtonian mechanics, where you have a bit of mathematics from which you can explain everything. You start off with positions of the planets, you crank through your equations, and you get predictions of those. But I've been talking about an extremely different kind of game, which seems to be quite consistent and seems to be a very rich game. So our proposal is that this is the essence of it. And now we can go on to propose that this game is played at the mysterious fundamental level beyond the Standard Model and general relativity. So how might this feature? Sorry, again, I haven't got to that. But it's life is a kind of game where you've got agents doing various sub-games. And I just want to make a point for people, anybody who's familiar with artificial intelligence and its agents, that this is a different kind of model from artificial intelligence models, because agents in artificial intelligence have a very specific behavior, whereas these agents are just things that emerge, like the things that happen in weather. But that's only for the experts, really. Okay, well, now I want to get to what our idea is about fundamental life. Physicists at least believe that there is some physics that we don't understand, which is deeper than the physics that we do understand, the Standard Model and general relativity. So by some sort of gradual evolution, the same kind of evolution as we get with ordinary life, all sorts of things will happen, and one of the things that might happen is that this life might start building something like a universe, in the same way that birds build nests, say. So presumably it would benefit this kind of life to our universe. It might be something which it can do things which it couldn't at the primitive level. John Archibald Wheeler tackled this question of the origin of the laws of physics, which is exactly this thing we have, problem we have here. And he used the idea that observers in quantum mechanics are also participators in reality, and he suggested observation could gradually structure the details of the universe. It was somewhat very tentative argument, since he didn't really have any explanation of why they should actually produce things like universes. So at least we can say that we have Wheeler's argument in a clearer form, because here it's not simply observation which is structuring it, but it's observation in a biological context. And there are reasons in a biological context why observation should produce useful things, because it's essentially natural selection, that systems which do useful things like building nests are more likely to survive. So observation isn't just a sort of casual process for biology. Observation is directed towards some end result. So that fits in nicely with that. And now, to get back to what I was saying at the beginning, things like mathematics and music are not very plausibly explained by the traditional mechanisms. And if you had something which had sort of existed for infinite time, as this background would have, it seems quite reasonable to suppose that it would have been able to develop mathematical concepts and music, which would be a language for doing something without a definite meaning. This is actually proposed in one of the papers on my website. Particular themes have a kind of power and can do things. Also, it's interesting, one of my colleagues lent me a book by Keith Ward recently, since we're interested in the science and religion questions. This book, Big Questions in Science and Religion. And I was very interested to see that the ideas about how the universe might exist and how God might act, which Ward had derived from a theological context, are very similar to the ideas which come out of this model, simply assuming that there's life at a biological level. So I think it's very interesting that actually about 20 years ago I wrote an article for Physics Education called Science and Spirituality, the Next Grand Unification. So this is beginning to look like the details of that, that physics combined with biology is giving you a kind of spiritual concept. Whether how much you might take this seriously and what kind of model you have is up to you at the moment. Much research will be needed to explore the details. It can't be a thing which just one person or one group can do any more than the whole of biology can be done by one group. I mean, it's all very well to say I have found the basis of inheritance, but where that leads to is a large-scale thing. So I think the thing is that people need to be persuaded that this is something worth looking to, and then people move from string theory into this. The high-power mathematicians will see where it could lead to and develop all the nice formalism. I might add on here, going back to science and religion, that it seems to be a modern idea that science and religion are incompatible. It's somehow you started having to be an atheist and not take religion seriously, or to say this is something that's nothing to do with science. Recently, there's a play by somebody who'd been researching Newton on Newton's... it was about Newton's ideas. And in fact, Newton came out, apparently developed his ideas from a religious point of view. He wanted to know how God acted in the universe. But nowadays, if you actually push religion point of view, you may end up losing your job, as happened, unfortunately, recently to someone. Okay, so coming to my conclusion. First of all, I've talked about what seems a very interesting alternative. It's alternative. It's not quite an alternative to materialism, but it's an alternative to how the physical sciences have gone, where you can get a complete theory. Instead, I'm arguing that the religion is on the one. I'm arguing that reality is a much vaguer and slippery thing than physical sciences would assume. But nevertheless, there are principles which one can apply, systems that build up in certain ways, which one ought to be able to study theoretically, as Osborne did in his computer simulation. So it's not really philosophy. Anything you can model on a computer is presumably not philosophy. And I think probably materialism has had its day. But anyway, let the best model win, the future will decide. Thank you very much.